When we get to the question and answer period, we'll either have them repeated or see if we can't share the mic or something here so that they get picked up on the taping system here. So I'm Rocky Pirro. I'm the president of the Lutheran Network here and delighted to introduce our session this morning, Abrahamic Traditions, the Tri-Faith Initiative here. Our presenters will do self-introductions here, but I'll just offer a quick overview of this seminar this morning. So the Tri-Faith Initiative is really a remarkable joining of Christians, Muslims, and Jews in Omaha, Nebraska. The three faiths share a plot of land, some common spaces, a coordinating council, and leadership. The communities are led by a Christian priest from the Episcopal tradition, a rabbi, and an imam. The three faith communities seek to go where one has gone before, worshiping and serving the God of Abraham. So our seminar this morning explores life and ministry of the Tri-Faith Initiative here, and we thank you very much for joining us here. So please.
Thank you. Well, we want to thank the National Workshop on Christian Unity and the planners for inviting us and giving us an opportunity to share our story of interfaith work going on right now in Omaha, Nebraska, which has been going on since 2006. We're honored to be here, and we want you to know that we realize that many of you have been doing ecumenical and interfaith work much longer than we have to greater degrees. So we're not here to teach anybody anything. We're simply here to share our story, to share some of the things that we hope to accomplish in the coming years and some of the things that we've already done together. We're a pretty informal presentation. And we hope to leave lots of time at the end for any questions that you might have for us. A couple of corrections on the introduction that we had sent in a month or two ago, I guess several months ago. We thought Rabbi Israel from Temple Israel was going to be able to be with us today, and he was not. But we're very capably represented by John Meyer from Temple Israel. I'll give you his bio in a moment. And the American Institute for Islamic Studies and Cultures did not have an imam, but they have some very committed and wonderful members that lead their worship and their community. So with us today from Temple Israel is Mr. John Meyer. John is president of his family trucking company and warehouse business in Omaha, Nebraska. They've been there about 32 years. From 1997 to the present, he has been a member of the Board of Trustees of Temple Israel, the Reformed Jewish Synagogue in Omaha. He served as president from 2007 through 2009. He is a member of the Coordinating Committee of the new temple building being built on the site of the Tri-Faith Initiative, and has been a founding board member of the Tri-Faith Initiative since 2006. He serves on the Tri-Faith Executive Committee as well as the Building Committee for the Tri-Faith Center. John's married, and he and his wife have five kids and four grandchildren. So we are glad to have John with us. We do this in historical order, by the way. Whenever we do a presentation, it always does Jewish, Christian, Muslim, and that's the way we've always done things. So that's just one of our quirks, if you will. But I'm the Reverend Ken and Tim Anderson. I'm presently the Chief Operating Officer of the Episcopal Tri-Faith Foundation and Canon for Episcopal Tri-Faith Ministries. I have served two parishes in Nebraska. I've been an ordained minister about 26 years. Before then, I was Canon to the Ordinary for 5 years under Bishop Joe Burnett, and I have been doing this work for about the last three years. I also am married, have two wonderful children and two beautiful grandchildren. We always got to get that. But that so, Dr. Syed Muhdin was born in, Doctor, help me with this, Hyderabad?
Hyderabad.
Hyderabad, okay. India. And all of his medical training has been here at Creighton University in Omaha. He joined the faculty in 1971, and he currently serves as are you head of medicine? No, head of cardiology.
The chair of medicine.
Chair of medicine and cardiology. He is the president of the American Institute of Islamic Studies and Culture, the Islamic and Muslim community that we are working with in the Tri-Faith Initiative. He is also a founding member of the board, as I am, of the Tri-Faith Initiative. He has 3 children and 4 grandchildren. So that's who you're listening to today. And as I say, we're a pretty informal group. We want to start out this morning with just a very short video. It's about 8 minutes long. This video was prepared for us for our first major event that we had that took place back in 2009 called Abraham's Tent. But it will give you a sense and kind of a feel of some of the people who have been involved in this since 2006. So I think you'll enjoy that. And then following the video, we'll give you a little background on all 4 of the entities that are involved in this Tri-Faith Initiative, because there are 4 entities: the Jewish community, the Islamic community, the Christian community, and the Tri-Faith 501c3 itself. Then we will share some of our stories, some of our challenges, some of our hopes and dreams, and then where we are on our project today. Okay, and then hopefully leave plenty of time for questions. So we'll just run the video quick.
I'm not surprised that the Tri-Faith Initiative began in Omaha, Nebraska. This community, the people in this place, this sacred place, has a gift to offer the rest of the country and the rest of the world. It is not an accident that we refer to this place as the heartland.
We're just calling it our journey, because we do feel we're on a journey, going all the way back from Abraham and going as far forward as we can take it as a group. And we are hoping people will join us on that journey.
We have the Abrahamic commonality, which is a good place to begin building these relationships. And it may have been too difficult to try to begin something like this without that commonality amongst at least the 3 participants.
Our message is to that by having the 3 faiths together, we will make our own faith, our own belief in our own religion stronger.
In times of conflicts and challenges, and those conflicts are not only coming from the Middle East, but the whole world sometimes is embroiled in those moments of difficulties. The only way that I know how to talk about this is to be open about this and raise those points, if it's in a tri-faith board meeting or in personal relationship with members of the tri-faith community, where the discussion needs to be open and painful and for a sincere honesty.
When you have really hard issues to deal with, the only way you can make progress on those is if there is a foundation of trust and a willingness to work together to try to solve a problem. When the war in Gaza broke out, we in Omaha were able to sit down together and issue a common statement about peace and humanitarianism that didn't step on anybody's toes, that didn't take anybody's position, that didn't say anybody was right or wrong, but that was oriented towards solving the underlying problems.
My dream is that we indeed will be on the same piece of land, sharing a variety of things, but yet having our own classrooms and our own sanctuary and our own schools and social hall and whatever. But my dream goes to that fourth building. And the dream of my fourth building is that that will be a center where educators and clergy and students from all over the world will come together and promote. Maybe this whole beginning of promoting peace.
For me, the idea of coming together on one campus with an interfaith center addresses the topic of fear directly. It says that we could never build walls high enough to protect ourselves, but if we were to build bridges of mutual understanding, we together could have the opportunity to move beyond fear.
As our children grow up, they will be exposed to all these religions. I'm very hopeful that as they listen to different aspects of believing the same thing, for example, the value of humans, the understanding of God, the importance of prayers, they'll get different perspectives and not just one perspective.
Our kids aren't afraid of each other in the way that generations before us have been. And the youth bring a new perspective of hope. They bring a promise of understanding and a diversity and dialogue that is truly about coexistence and mutual respect and understanding.
You know, when I talk to other Christians or just friends and neighbors about what I'm involved in and what we're trying to do, almost overwhelmingly the reaction is just, oh, that is so exciting. As almost an antidote to what we read about in the newspapers.
We are unique in Omaha to have a coming together of minds and spirits and faiths where it works.
I think this is something that is going to take some time, and maybe we should be blessed that we do have the time to let people understand what a wonderful opportunity this is, not for just people in Omaha, not just for people in our own congregation, but for people all over the world.
Well, I hope that gives you a little idea of some of the participants. That was presented in 2009 at our first major event, and a lot has happened since 2009. We'd already spent 3 years searching for ground, and we spent another couple years before we found the ground. It wasn't quite 40 years that we were searching for the promised land, but it seemed like it at times to us. So at this time, what I'd like to do is introduce John Meyer and let John tell you a little bit about Temple Israel. And like I say, we're pretty informal. We'll share who we are and share some of the stories and let you.
First and foremost, I am not a rabbi.
Is that on?
Yeah. Okay. Temple Israel in Omaha started in 1871 when Jews who had emigrated to the area started a burial society. They created a congregation and formed Congregation Temple Israel. Temple is a Reform Jewish synagogue. Omaha has about 6,200 Jews. There is one synagogue for each denomination. There's an Orthodox, a Conservative, a Reform, a Reconstructionist, and a Chabad house. So we actually have five in the Omaha Council Bluffs area. So therefore, we're the only Reform synagogue. We have about 720 families. We are membership-based, which means our families all do pay dues. And as many as 35% of our family units are tri-faith they're interfaith or multi-faith families. And the reason I say that is because There are parents and grandparents and brothers and siblings. So if you really extended it, there's probably well over 50% of our family units are affected in some way by interfaith, which has been a big push amongst the Reformed Jews for many, many years. The current facility was built back in 1955. It was built for a congregation at the time was 300 family units, and we've outgrown that over the years. So during the years, we've had two major building expansions, and in 2003, we started the process of looking at feasibility and practicality and desirability for a new synagogue out in the western suburbs of Omaha, which is where it was perceived that most of our congregants for demographic reasons and for proximity reasons. I was chosen to lead that push and that search for ground, and we met with architects, and we came back basically to the congregation with three options. One was to do another expansion project. One was to completely raise the building and then start over on the current site, and one option was to go get a new site for either an existing or a new building. The synagogue ultimately chose option three, and myself and a few others were involved then in going about looking for a piece of ground. So in 2003, Temple started looking for ground, and fast forward, ultimately we had identified as many as 25 sites and different locations around town. This at the time was now 2004 or 5, and at that point I was elected to the executive committee. I was already a board member. And so I've been involved at the executive committee level and as president and past president. I'm still on the executive committee for one more year. And I've been involved in this, and I've seen, and we'll get into it later when we start telling our stories, but I've seen all different kinds of reactions, positive and negative both. And that's been one of my biggest struggles, and we'll get into that in a little bit. We found a site in 2005. We thought it was perfect. We were looking for something that was in a neighborhood such as that we currently reside in. We have a church across the street and the community playhouse, and we're not in a big major thoroughfare, and we're not near a big shopping center and busy streets, but we're convenient and proximally located to all the conveniences. And a group of us really wanted to try to recreate that. So Bob Freeman, who was in the video, who is the chair of the Tri-Faith Initiative, past president of Temple, lives in the neighborhood and wanted to recreate that. So he went out looking to try to build or move and find our own neighbors and bring our own neighbors along. So that was important to him, and over the course of, I don't know how long it is, but I'm sure Syed will talk about that. Bob and Syed met, and they had coffee. We were looking for other faith groups, potentially, who were looking to do the same thing, move out west for demographics or for expansion or for whatever reason. And the meetings with Syed basically were to talk about, you know, what might be. One meeting led to many. More folks were involved. And the two groups, the Jews and the Muslims, decided, hey, maybe we should have some Christian presence here. And Bob approached the bishop of the Omaha Diocese, of the Catholic Omaha Diocese, and also the then priest of Boys Town. And for a number of reasons, some political, some expansion, some demographics, just a lot of reasons, they were not interested in placing a church out in that area of town. Bob is also interfaith family. He's married to an Episcopalian, and that's the connection, and that's how the Jews came to find Reverend Tim Anderson. With that, I'll hand it to you.
Okay, thanks, Tom. As I said, Temple had found this wonderful 35 acres of ground out in West Omaha, and they decided they didn't need all that ground, so they went searching for possible neighbors, and of course the Muslims were the first one that they had gone to, and as John said, eventually they approached the Episcopal Diocese of Nebraska. We are the whole state of Nebraska. We have about 56 parishes across the state. We have 9 congregations in the metro area of Omaha. Our Bishop Scott Barker
has been with us for about a year and a half now. This project started under Bishop Joe Burnett, who's now assisting bishop in Maryland. But I was canon of the ordinary when this all began. I was the assistant of the bishop there for Bishop Burnett, and I'll never forget the day he walked into my office and placed a letter on my desk, and he said, "I'm not sure what this is all about. It's from a local attorney here. He's a member of Temple Israel. He was trying to get a hold of me to talk to me about something, and I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks. Would you mind taking care of this?" And, of course, as a dutiful canon, I said, "Of course, Bishop, no problem. I'll do that." So then began a 2 to 3 week back and forth trying to connect with Bob on the phone. And finally, Bob got a hold of me, and he apologized. He said, "You know, I'm sorry it's taking so long to get together with you," but he says, I've been in Scotland. And I said, "Oh, you have? Did you get a chance to play some golf there?" I didn't know this guy from Adam, but I said, "Did you get a chance to play some golf?" He said, "Yeah, that's why we went over." So I didn't care if he was Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, or Buddhist. He was a golfer, and he was okay with me. So we actually started talking about that, and we set up our very first meeting to talk about this possibility of a church being located on the same property. And we met on a golf course, and we played a round of golf together, and we debate about whether it was the third or the fifth hole that we really forgot about the golf and were so excited about the opportunities here. But that's how it started. And later you will see that for Bob and I, this started on a golf course and it's going to end on a golf course. And so that's kind of cool. When we entered this initiative, it happened to fit into our strategy for growing our diocese. In fact, we had property out in West Omaha, but we felt that this would be a greater chance to do something. So we sold that property and said we would do this. That's how the Diocese of Nebraska entered this initiative. All three of us are different in where we come from. Temple Israel is a long-established congregation. Okay? In their case, they were picking up their whole family. They wanted to go out west and build a brand new home, okay? New house. Their goal, and rabbis, and your task was to bring all the family members to that new location. Yeah, and knowing that your neighbors were going to be a Christian on the right and a Muslim on the left. That was their challenge. Our challenge was we didn't have a congregation we wanted to move to that site. We're building a new congregation. And when we first started out, we would talk about this congregation as a parish, but more than a parish. Our bylaws for our foundation are very much like the National Cathedral's bylaws. In fact, they're just amended a little bit. We wanted it to be kind of a house of prayer. And that has even extended to the point now where we talk about ourselves not as much about the Episcopal Church, but as the Christian presence on the campus. From the very beginning, the Episcopalians knew we could never represent all of Christianity in this enterprise. So we have especially reached out to our ELCA brothers and sisters. We're in full communion with them. That seemed like the best partnership, and they were very interested. So we have started this new congregation now, and it's been interesting. We meet on Sunday nights, and it's at 5 o'clock, and it's people who have been Episcopalians and looking for something more. We have Lutherans, we have Roman Catholics, we have Presbyterians that come. We'll have maybe 65 to 70 people attending our classes. Worship is probably 35 to 40 average Sunday attendance, but for just 2 years, we're not too dissatisfied with that. Since we don't have our own facility yet. So that's kind of where we are right now, and that's we'll get into the buildings and stuff later. But Dr. Mooding has a wonderful story about how that first meeting went, and I want him to share that with you, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. And again, on behalf of the American Institute of Islamic Studies and Culture, I want to thank you for inviting us to be a part of this wonderful presentation, and I hope that we will give you information and provide you with some insight in how we are working and to achieve our goals. very briefly, the American Institute of Islamic Studies and Culture was founded in approximately 2006. And the primary reason for the foundation of this institute was to create a center which will combine both religious activities as well as educational activities. And historically, that's the kind of a role the mosques have played in the past. But currently, they are thought to be just simply a places of worship. The second reason for establishing this institute was that the population of Muslims in Omaha is approximately 2,000. And they come from entirely different places and cultures, language, professions, which is, you know, characteristic of Midwest, actually. And unlike the larger cities in Omaha, where they are big enough to have a single, to have multiple places of worship and multiple institutions, Omaha is too small. So we thought that this will serve to unite the Muslim families, serve as their cultural as well as civic center, and of course provide their religious services. It's unique in several features. One, that it recognized the equality of men and women. And I'm sure you are all aware that this has not been the practice in many of the Islamic countries. The second is that our mosque and our institute is open to all denominations of Islam. We do not believe that we should differentiate between Sunnis and Shias and other smaller denominations. We do exist. So, and the third was our strong belief that we should participate in a dialogue with other Abrahamic religions. And when Bob came to us with that invitation, we sort of leaped at it. And we thought it was the right thing to do, right time to do. And this is how the Islamic Center was founded. It has two primary reasons to exist. One is to, of course, to be Islamic institute, which based the principles I just outlined, but also to help and participate in establishing a tri-faith campus. And that, I think we are on our way to do that. We, as Tim said, that I don't think you have said that yet. Well, he will tell you that how we arrived at the place which we have now and where will we go from.
Okay. Would you share with them that? I think this is a great story, the very first meeting that you had in your conversation with us.
I certainly will, with great pleasure. One of my friends, Mr. Shakil Ahmed, was active in cultural and religious activities with the temple. And he had a fairly good social relationships with Bob as well as with Rabbi Israel, who, as you learn, had played a very key role in this. And they came to him to discuss this with the Islamic community. And it just happens that we were working on establishing this institute. So Shakil and I and one of my other friends who were also active met with Rabbi Israel and Bob in a public library. And as we walked in the room, we were surprised that each of us had brought food. And that has been a central theme of our ongoing organization.
For several years, we talked about this campus not as four buildings, but as four kitchens. So why don't we talk a little bit about what we have. Let's go through Temple's building situation right now with the land. And I think that how we came, why don't you tell them how we came to the promised land here
It's been a struggle. You would think that finding land would be like the easiest part of this, and that's actually what kept us from having anything happen beyond relationships. And to be honest with you, the fact that it took so long, I think, was a blessing. It's the relationships is what's created this as a unique organization. Besides the fact that we're going to be intentionally co-located on a single site of ground, our relationships have really become very strong. We know that we've gone through many phases and many developmental steps through the relationship, beyond just friendship and understanding, but that we really actually care about each other. We want to know about each other. We learn about each other's faiths and so on and so forth. So in 06, I was asked to join the Tri-Faith Board. It's pretty much when it was established. I think I missed one meeting. I think it was at meeting number two. So at the time, I was president of the synagogue, or I was the president-elect, excuse me, of the synagogue. And by nature, I was wearing multiple hats. I had already been looking for 3 years for ground. I'm now on the path to be president and so on at the synagogue. And now I'm doing Tri-Faith. The neighborhood and the dreaming part is what got me excited. Rabbi Azriel is very much for this. Are you going to tell the story of the 9/11?
Yes.
Okay, I won't step on that. So REA has been really involved in whether it's been Black Jewish dialogue or Muslim Jewish dialogue, Christian Jewish dialogue, and now a trialogue. We went out specifically now looking for land that would now house four buildings, not just our building. So instead of looking for 10 acres, we're now looking for 30 to 40 acres. A lot of things happened. We at one time thought we actually had 40 acres of ground that was excess land at Boys Town. Their board had decided to divest of some ground. It was a perfect piece for us. We were really excited. We kind of jumped the gun, and people thought we were going to get it. And for one reason or another, the board of Boys Town decided not to divest of that ground. So back to the search we went, and there's a Jewish country club in Omaha, Nebraska. It was basically established because the Jews were excluded from other country clubs in the city. And Highland Country Club, it was known as, became the Jewish Country Club. Highland, throughout the years, started allowing non-Jewish members, and one thing led to another. They were having struggles. It was at a time in the 90s when the economy was tough, and Highland became Ironwood, and it was just another country club. It was most of the Jews still went to that country club, but it was by no means a Jewish country club anymore. That country club basically was beginning to fail as a country club, and they were going to be auctioned off. Many of our temple members were actually on the board of that country club, and we thought it was kind of a shoo-in. On the other hand, we didn't want to be perceived as the group that basically put the nail in the coffin of the country club. So the bank, ironically, the bank that had the note on that country club is a the family is Episcopalian and very involved in those activities in Omaha.
God has his.
It's very has right. So one thing led to another. The bank we thought was going to take it back. The bank actually didn't take it back. Somebody else came in and bought it at auction. So it was a land developer in Omaha, and we immediately went to the land developers, Lockwood Construction, and they basically are putting together a multi-use 68-acre site.
That's 158 acres.
Excuse me, 168 acres, right. And we're taking basically a quadrant of it for the Tri-Faith area. All three of the faith-based groups have purchased their own site of ground, as well as Tri-Faith has purchased a piece of ground also. So at the time, it seemed like coming full circle. It's where the Jews went to be because we were excluded, and now it's going to be what we think is one of the most inclusive areas and uses of this land that it's ever seen, and hopefully for many, many years to come. I'm going to stop there. I'm going to talk more on some other stuff.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's fine. So, when we began this initiative, we did this a little different than most people do in dialogues, I think. If you're familiar with dialogues, you take a lot of time before you get to the hard questions. And I think we dealt with a lot of the hard questions right up the front. I mean, we said, what are we afraid of? What are going to be our largest challenges? And back in 2006, we came up with our outline of our basic memorandum of understanding of what this ministry was going to be, what this initiative was going to be about. And we've lived by this. It hasn't been amended at all since then. This can be found on our website as well as some other material. But we got those basic understandings out of the way. Things like one of the fears was, what about proselytization? What was going to happen there? And we just decided there will not be any on the campus. And, you know, we talk about, you know, how we'll share this the shared space. We concentrated on how to find our commonalities and how we could really build these bridges of respect and acceptance and trust and to challenge the stereotypes that were out there and learn from each other and really counter the influence of fear and misunderstanding, at least in our own community. So that's where we began. And so each of us in our own institutions have been raising up programs and workshops and other ways of trying to teach our own folks about the other two religions. So we do that within our own institutions. We do it as a tri-faith institution. The Episcopal community right now and the Christian presence has brought in the speakers from both of the other traditions to talk about their holy days and how they experience them. We have done great courses series on both Islam and Judaism just to help our people understand a little more. We brought in great speakers like Lucinda Mosher and had her spend weekends with us. We've done long-term series on comparative religions, and we just finished an 8-week series with the Anglican Lutheran traditions and our call to common mission, which was very helpful for both Lutheran and Episcopal communities in Omaha. We've toured our houses of worship and participated in some of the high holy days with them. So those are some of the things that we're doing to build the relationships. Our board of directors, and then I'll turn it over to Dr. Mooney, but our board of directors right now for the Tri-Faith Initiative, we started out with just 12 members of the board. Four from each of the three communities. This is for the Tri-Faith Initiative. And most of those members have been involved in this for quite a while. We're bringing in new ones. We've brought in new members now from the community at large who are not of the three faith communities, and that board will eventually expand to 24. So that's kind of where we are with our education piece. Doctor?
The Muslim community in Omaha, as I said earlier, is relatively small, about 2,000 people. And when 9/11 happened, we had only one place of worship, a rather small one. But Rabbi Azrael was very familiar with that because of his relationship with the Muslim community. And when 9/11 happened, he was the first person to arrive at the mosque to guard it. And was followed by another very prominent member of the community who was a Christian. So they actually were there when even thought crossed our mind that we ought to do something to protect the Islamic side. So they were ahead of us in that particular aspect. And they have always been very considerate of Islamic community and very supportive of the Islamic community. So I think we are very fortunate to have in Omaha such understanding and such support of each other. The Islamic Center, as Tim told you, has already bought the land, and we are in the process of raising funds to build a mosque as well as a cultural center We are somewhere about halfway through our fundraising project, and we hope to break ground in summer of this year.
So we have enough time for questions. I think we'll go ahead and just run through some slides just to give you an idea of what we're doing on these on this ground. And we talk a lot about the buildings because we realize that there are wonderful conversations going on all over the world, lots of dialogues, lots of ecumenical and interfaith dialogues. And I say to people, the only thing unique about us is that when most of those dialogues are finished, most of the people go back to their hotel room, pack their bag, and get on the plane, and then fly home. With our established residents, with our neighbors being there permanently, when we're done with our conversations, guess what? The next morning we wake up and we're still there. And my neighbor to the right is still Jewish, and my neighbor to the left is still Muslim. And as a Christian, I have to figure out, how do I love my neighbor as myself every single day? And that's the only thing that makes us unique amongst these, is that we've done this intentionally, and it's permanent. As you'll see, these structures are going to be permanent. This is the ground that we bought, and then I'm going to let John talk just a little bit about, there's Temple Israel under construction now. Go ahead, John, just briefly.
One of the unique things is Temple is the first to build and will be the first actually in their building. We're going to be open on for the high holidays this year, so at the end of August is when we'll actually have our first Shabbat service in there. The building is about 60,000 feet, and it's a huge amount of money. It's about $20 million, and it's a big piece. Interesting the way that everything orients. There's a water. It's basically a creek. It was on the golf course. It was three lakes. It's been redesigned to be a creek, and it always was a creek. And it's actually called Hell's Creek. And we intend to have a bridge that Tim's pointing at, and we intend to name that Heaven's Bridge. It's interesting. I do want to say not quite so much building. I did want to get this piece in. Is that one of the struggles that we had? Tim kind of alluded to it though. Is that the struggle we had and that I've had throughout being on the executive committee and then as president, the struggle is that our challenge was much harder at the beginning because we had to take 800 or 700 families of Jews who all have very diverse concepts and thoughts and beliefs and opinions of what they want and what they think they need. And we had to try to not splinter the congregation, not divide it, and bring the whole congregation to the new site and to have everybody basically buy into this. Our job was to establish consensus as well as we could. And my biggest struggle was, by the way, there was a period of time while I was president that our organization decides that the president will not sit on the Tri-Faith Board. So I was removed from the Tri-Faith Board for 2 years. And then when I was done with my presidential term, I went back on the Tri-Faith Board. But that's basically to make sure that the congregation knows that the president doesn't have any other issues tugging at them, and that they're actually looking out specifically and solely for Temple Israel. And the hard thing I had is like REA has been just in the forefront of relationships and interfaith dialogues and interfaith projects and so on and so forth. And I'm a firm believer in that. Obviously, it's very close to me. This whole process for the last 6 or 7 years has greatly increased my spirituality and my own knowledge of my own Jewish religion. I'm a trucking company and a warehouse owner, and I went to Temple kind of whenever I did, and it's really actually helped me grow as a person spiritually and religiously amazingly. It's to learn about the other religions doesn't actually water mine down. It makes it stronger, and we explain that to everybody, and it's true, and I know you all know that, but I am living testament of that, and so it's been great. The struggle I had was that we were not unanimous, and we do have those in our midst who are not in favor of this project for one reason or another. And it's now to the point where we were able to go out and fundraise, we were able to get consensus, and now our side of the story is going to be easier than my fellows on both sides of me because we have a congregation, we have the wherewithal, we have the people to call in to fund a huge project like that. And the struggle that the Christian community and the Muslim community will have now is that while the people who were involved for the first 6 years are all dreamers and of like mind and would show up when they wanted to, Now they have to come up with the dollars, and they don't have the congregations established to draw upon, and that's going to be their challenge now. So the new building, we're there, I hope that within the next probably 2 years, all four buildings will either be built or being built. I think that's the timeline we're on.
And I'm
going to
run through these slides real quick, but we're the Episcopal Tri-Faith Ministry.
It's been about building the relationships and at the pew level. I mean, what we're trying to do is take these conversations down from scholarly and clerical down to the average person in the pew that builds these kind of relations, learns about one another's faith. We do that with our kids. That's Rabbi out joining us one night, and our kids singing with him. That's what this whole initiative has been about, building relationships at the ground level, trying to educate people, trying to help them be able to articulate their own faith and share their own faith, and yet understand other people's faiths. We do things with each other on high holy days. This was the Easter of 2011. Muslims and Jewish women and kids came out and hid Easter eggs for our kids. And then the Muslim and Jewish kids went out and helped find the eggs. They just hid. That was good. One of our things that we're very, very thankful for is we're recognized by the National Council of Churches as one of five congregations involved in interfaith work, and that was the presentation last year. Here again, the Episcopal Church is here. Here is Temple. This is not a complete drawing of the Tri-Faith Center, but then the mosque lies there. But that's where our building will eventually sit. These are conceptual drawings. This is what you always dream that you can have someday. You know, what you end up with, we're not sure, but this is what we're dreaming of having. These would be office areas for ecumenical work and interfaith work, the worship space and gathering spaces. And then a retreat center over here that scholars, J2A courses, youth groups could come and experience this interfaith ministry and have that kind of experience. So this is just a little bit of a... Doctor, I'm on your slides. I know you can't see them, but that's all right. If you want to tell us about the institute, where you are with the building program anyway, anything else you might
want to go for? As I said earlier, that we do own the land, and we do have architects and other people who have expertise in this sort of thing are continuing to work to develop the structural outlines and backgrounds, and you might see a picture coming up which has the...
That's where your building is located.
Right. This is the original concept. It might change a little bit as we go farther. We do have a temporary site currently where we meet and also have our congregational prayers on Friday. It also has a small beginning of a Sunday school which teaches the Muslim kids about Islam and the basic fundamentals.
Real quickly, this is the concept for our Episcopal, I got a lot of other slides. This was the event at the our first major event at the Quest Center, which we had 1,200 people show up in Omaha. For this event, we did worship together. We had Jewish prayers, evening prayer, and prayers for the Muslim community. So each group did their own prayers, and we participated. We're not trying to mingle these three religions, but we're trying to teach people what they are and have them experience it. We were very happy to have Catherine Jefford Shorey, the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Rabbi Noble from, I think, Cincinnati, and Ingrid Mattson, who was then the president of North American Islamic Association, join us for that in a conversation of peace. We take this show on the road. We do all sorts of presentations for local communities. This was over in Iowa. But we're just trying to get the word out that these things are happening and people can help and participate with us. This was a presentation to the ELCA Synod the day that they were electing their new bishop in Nebraska last year. We took this out on the road to our general convention last year and had a booth there and was well received. Like I say, we go out and we do help each other celebrate our high holy days. This was at Temple, Rosh Hashanah, and Muslim and Christians were there to pass out apples and honeys following their service. We do that sort of thing, but getting to meet them. This was the Seder just held this year, 2013. I think we had almost 300 people at Temple, and 50 of those were interfaith or interfaith partners. Had a wonderful time. Actually, 2 years ago, we had a Seder meal in an Episcopal church, and it was the largest Seder meal of in the metro area that year. I mean, it was, but the Temple put it on for us. It wasn't Christians doing the Seder meal. Temple doing it and us sharing. Eid al-Fitr. 2011 and 2012. Just one real quick story because it's the kind of thing that you. This is why I'm in it. You know, we're out there on a Sunday. I'm in my collar, and we're out there getting ready to after the prayers are over to help the Muslims break their fast by handing out dates, and we have Jews and Christians there to do that. But we're setting up, and the prayers are getting ready to start, and my good friend Kaleem is out there still directing people into the prayers. And I said, Kaleem, go into prayer. I can show people where to go and if they come and looking for the prayer space. No more had he walked in the door and gone into the prayer, shut the door, than two young Saudis came walking down the hallway. And I walked up to them. I had my collar and I said, are you looking for the Eid service? And their eyes got this big around. And thank you. What is this priest doing, showing us where the service is? But those are just some of the wonderful, you know, kind of things that happened. That was the Easter egg hunt this year. We have an interplay going on with our young people. There's 15 children involved in that. We try to keep the ratios about the same. They meet on a bi-monthly basis. She does wonderful work with them. They know more about each other's faith at 8 or 10 years old now than most of us adults do. And it's a wonderful experience. We have a real active tri-faith youth activities between the three communities. We have an annual picnic, which is well attended. I think we probably had, 150 or so at this last year's picnic. It's just a time for social activities and to get to know each other, build relationships. The Episcopal Youth Corps, some of you may know about that, but that's where we have young people working in dioceses and parishes. And we have Resurrection House, which is a discernment house where the youth are there for 9 months living, discerning their vocation, and they're very active also. So it gives them a chance right off the bat. But as I said, it's about conversations. It's about building our relationships with each other. This is the Tri-Faith Center. As you can see, here's Temple Israel over here. Here's the bridge, and this would be the Tri-Faith Center. Once again, this is our dream. What we may end up building is the center part here. And I'm sorry, guys, but you can't see the pictures, and I can't, so I'm not meaning to dominate this. But so this is a conceptual drawing with Abraham's tent here in the middle. Eventually, we hope to have an auditorium here and a day school here that will be interfaith day school. Our architect is John Goldman out of San Francisco. John designed St. Ignatius of Gregory out in San Francisco. If any of you've ever seen that, he's actually from Omaha and grew up on Ironwood playing tennis there rather than golf. But so he's very committed to this project. This is what it would look like from 132nd Street. Where you would see here's the church, the Tri-Faith Center, and the mosque. The temple's on the other side, so it's hard to see them. And it wasn't that we wanted to find a building where we could be separate. In fact, you saw the drawings in the video. We had visions of finding ground that would be, so all four of those buildings would be touching each other with water. It just didn't work out. We're kind of touching each other with water, but it's a creek. So. But here's the Abraham's tent piece, which we'll hope will hold about 250 people for lectures, the parties, whatever. And then there's library and presentation rooms here, video things. Everything that we do, we hope we can video and send out, and we can also bring in video. So wonderful conferences like this, if you've got a speaker, maybe you could hook up and we could have people from Omaha join in those kinds of presentations. So anyway, that's real quickly what that is. And we got 15 minutes for questions. I know, and if that's not enough, we've got stories. Yes, sir. Right. How many Christian groups are involved? Formally, the Episcopal Diocese of Nebraska is the one who owns the ground. We went out and bought the ground. And we began working with an architect to see what we would do there. But as we progressed and as people came to us and said, how can we participate, we realized, you know, we've got to figure out a way to do that. So the ELCA, Synod in Nebraska, is very involved. Like I said, I've got four pastors and a number of their congregants that come on a regular basis. We have the liturgist of one of our largest Roman Catholic parishes in Omaha. He and his family and two kids come almost every week, and they participate in the children's offering. I know we have a couple of Presbyterians that come often. And we're not trying to convert them to be Episcopalians. We want them to come. What we envision, at least for the church piece, is that we would have multiple communities, you know, worshiping communities using that facility. That's our plan. We're trying to raise the money to build the building so that you don't have a congregation worrying about trying to build a building or continue to maintain it.
Good morning, and thank you.
Oh. Thank you, Catherine.
I'm thrilled that you were part of the group Interfaith Engaged
Thank you.
That was honored last year.
Thank you.
I want to ask a question that will sound critical, but I'll just put it out there, and you can trust my intentions are not as such, because I love this project. But in an age when the churches, even across the street here, are being sold, and so many of the denominations are struggling with keeping up with buildings and clergy and programs, what can you share some of the tensions around a massive building project in a time such as this?
For the church, yeah,
the church,
right.
Specific.
Well, there's, yeah.
Believe it, we have it too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and there is, and there's, you know, I mean, that's even within just the Episcopal, diocese. You know, how can we spend this kind of money? And so, what we're saying is, we'll probably end up building the centerpiece of that, which, you know, is, and here again, where we are moving more towards is, I think the Christian communities are going to have to do church differently in the future. We know that. We can't all afford to have these large buildings that we're paying utilities on and stuff. So why not maybe build one that multiple communities can use as their worship space and do other activities and ministries together ecumenically? That's the way this is moving now. So far, they have, you know, we haven't really been out to ask anybody for a lot of money yet, because we really want to know what this is going to look like before we ask them. But from what we're hearing in the community, yes, that's what they want us to do.
So it's time for a confession. So do I have clergy that'll give me absolution? So originally, when we talked about this and we were dreaming about this, and I was at the time on the site selection committee for Temple, Tri-Faith hadn't even been born yet, and we came across this and we got together and we started having relationships and we thought this could really be cool. My ultimate goal was for each of us to build small facilities and build one large congregating sanctuary that would be shared. I was actually at a session in Minneapolis where the whole room moves in their convention center. I don't know if you've ever been in it, but they can actually take four separate rooms and swing them. They actually pivot, and they're round, and they become one big room with, it looks like a big clover leaf. So my concept was, let's build a huge sanctuary, big enough sanctuary for any of the groups, and to have a kind of a rounded triangular altar, bima, whatever, that would rotate in so that the artifacts for each religion could be there. And that you could actually have the pews rotate and flip under and go onto the ground, so you'd have an open floor for the Muslims. Now, this was my huge concept.
Yeah. Now, I got to tell you,
John is a dreamer. But I want to tell you something. This is why it's confessional time, because that concept stuck in people's mind in my congregation and my synagogue for years. And when we as a group decided, no, we're not going to do that, we're all going to have our own individual faith communities and our own structures, and that we would share a forest structure and we would come together for events and social and all that, but that we weren't sharing a kitchen and we weren't sharing an administrative wing or anything like that, my congregation couldn't get past what I had said. And it literally took probably 4 years under the sails of this thing, and delayed us and delayed us and delayed us, because without the Jews, without any of us, this wouldn't happen. But without the Jews, there wouldn't be a tri-faith. And it was we who were looking for a site, and there were many amongst us who wanted us to just forget it, go find a 12-acre site and just do it. And that was probably my biggest hurt, my biggest struggle, and my biggest difficulty I had with people who were powers to be in our community, who could only see it one way and couldn't dream and couldn't see different things, and couldn't hear that I had said, "All right, stop, we're not going to do that." Oh, sure, a lot of them did, but the resistant ones were certainly, I don't want to say this to sound
critical.
Well, I don't want to sound, anyway. Many of the people who were critical had a lot of the dollars that could make this or make this work or not work. How's that? But not all, and I don't want to say that carte blanche, but I mean, that was a reality of what happened, and I had to go through the politics as the president, and then, of course, I was, by the way, when I first got on the executive board, I was treasurer. So, I mean, I've been in all the different pieces of this.
Our job is easier in one way and more difficult than the other. One, that we do not have established large mosque, which we will be competing. We actually will be helping the other smaller mosques to provide additional resources for them. But there is a very conservative group of Muslims in Omaha who are somewhat resistant to the idea that we ought to have a campus with two other faiths of Ibrahim, Dualdo of Ibrahimic origin, and have a tri-faith center. That sounds foreign to them. And they are worried that this will dilute the Islamic religion, and would actually, we have been accused of creating a new religion in spite of our repeated reassurance that we believe, as you heard, that participation in the project actually strengthens your own beliefs. You get to learn more not only about the other two Abrahamic religions, but also about your own religion, what the foundation is, what the philosophy is, and what did actually Prophet said.
Yeah. I don't know who was. Go ahead. No, this is an older neighborhood actually in Omaha that's surrounded by
the surrounding is residential, but there will be residential within this. A quarter of this is residential. It's brand new. There's only like three starts. There's only one house built right now.
Oh, well, but all the let me
so all, while he's flipping through pictures, right. The Omaha is a strong, very strong Jewish community. And so if you are Jewish and you come to the community, you start at the Jewish Community Center, you seek out the different synagogues, and there's all kinds of onboarding and incorporation issues and ways about going to become a member. It won't be because we're tri-faith. I mean, we're still going to be just the only Reformed Jewish synagogue. So if you're a Reformed Jew, you'll come to us if you want. Kind of an answer to your previous question, that's a struggle in the Jewish community, huge struggle. In Omaha, it's not so much the unaffiliated, which is big in other cities, but we have a slowing, declining mass of people that will come to communal prayer.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. They want to do Twitter, and they want short attention spans, you know, 140 words. So we're trying, you know, the rabbi can only have 140 words in a sermon. Not true, but some of their characters, yeah, but we left it be words. He likes to make it 140 minutes, however, and that's a problem. But anyway, we do have that problem, too, and there are many in our midst who think, why are we building, you know, our current facility is 40,000 feet, and this will be almost 60, and people think that's just too big. But the reality is that our facility is not big enough for what we do on most big occasions, large funerals, weddings, bar mitzvahs, and so on.
You were asking about the houses. These houses are already there all around, so those neighbors know that this is coming into their neighborhood. And it's gone through the city and all that, and we actually had lots of
99.9% like it. There's one guy who was a struggle.
Yeah, only one voice came out negative, so it was really very, very positive. Yes. We are each putting on our own programs in our own worship spaces, inviting the others to come. You know, anytime we do something. We don't have a space to do – well, yes. Well, I mean, we have. Lucinda Mosher's come. Barbara Brown Taylor was it. We have been partnering with other Christian churches in Omaha, anything that does with interfaith and other interfaith groups in Omaha, and intend to continue that. So, yes, we've had people from the outside come in. Amy Jo Levine's been there, a number of folks. And that's the kind of thing we hope will just happen all the time. Yes. You might have seen, and you guys can answer this too, you might have seen the little shot in the video where, you know, right before our first great big event, which was in March, the Gaza War broke out. And, you know, what's this going to do to our event? You know, are we going to be able to do this? And that's when we sat down and wrote an editorial from Tri-Faith Initiative in response to that conflict. And that is what we've agreed to do. With these three communities is as far as possible. We will make our statements and try to keep them. And we have focused our efforts on our faiths, not necessarily the political stances, and I know that's hard to do. We know that anything that happens over in Israel and Palestine and other places in the world affects our relationships. But there's enough of a trust built up with those of us involved that I think we can answer those, but we know that's going to be a challenge always.
Are you involved in any humanitarian work jointly in Israel and Palestine?
The only thing that we've done jointly so far is Episcopalians helped raise money for, and other Christians helped raise money for the hospital that's in Palestine, and sent that over. I mean, that's right now we're involved in some local things in Omaha. But eventually, what we're hoping to do is be able to speak to some of these issues as one voice, whether it's violence and crime in North Omaha, in South Omaha, any place in Omaha, you know, that we can speak as a group. Doctor, anything you want to add?
No, I think, you know, Tim has described our efforts very well. Our idea is that the conflicts, no matter where they occur, usually have either an economic or a political base, and we should never interpret this as being religious.
Question? Yes, sir.
Can I ask a question about interreligious marriage within
yes.
the context of the tri-religion experiment or enterprise? I'm just wondering about whether people in interreligious marriage are coming to your services.
I believe so. The Reformed Jewish community, nation, North American, for many years started a program like in the 80s. It was called Outreach, and it was specifically for interfaith marriages. My first wife and I were an interfaith couple. She converted to Judaism after our first year of marriage, but we were very involved at Temple in the interfaith and the outreach community in that dialogue. Ironically, as inclusive as I've been saying and as we've been talking about our rabbi, it wasn't until I was president that we finally convinced him, and we didn't convince him, he struggled with it for years, to perform interfaith marriages. So up until 2009, he had been the rabbi there for 20-some years and would not perform interfaith marriage. So kids who wanted to get married would have to go to a hotel or do a justice of the peace or go to Kansas City and find another rabbi or whatever. Or, as we said, they would go and they would get married by the priest or the pastor of the Christian partner of that union. And so we have always been very open and welcoming for all faiths. And I believe that once we're all three there, because your question does kind of talk to like when we're all there, what it's going to be like. I see that as being not proselytizing and not going against the memorandum of understanding, but all of us being open and welcoming to any choice that the couple may want to make. And now, as our rabbi, who will be retiring in a couple of years, one of the conditions of the new rabbi search, and we just hired an associate rabbi, is that the condition is that they're open to the tri-faith memorandum of understanding, so they have to understand and believe in and practice interfaith and tri-faith dialogue, and that they have interfaith marriage, that is okay.
Yeah, just quickly, one story. Bob Freeman, who is president of the initiative right now, his wife is Episcopalian, and he was speaking with Nasser al-Sharif one day, and he said, you know, I go to church with Rob once in a while, but I just don't really experience much there. And Nasser said, Bob, God's everywhere. You know, you can experience God anywhere, but it's church, whatever. So the next time Bob went to church with Robin, he experienced God in church. So Bob likes to tell the story. It took a Muslim to teach a Jew how to experience God in church. So I don't know if we've answered your question, but it will be issues that each of these three faith communities will certainly be challenged with. Any other questions? I know we're about run out. Yes.
In the temple, you said there was some opposition. Did some people leave? And if so, did they form a new Reformed congregation, or did they go to other options?
I'm happy to report that, first of all, there was opposition in our synagogue just to doing a new building. I mean, that was going to happen no matter what. So after many years and after slow playing this and cultivating it and having many relationships and events that were tri-faith, many, many more people who either were ambivalent or didn't like it have come around to being big supporters of it. So I would say to you that the detractors or the opponents of our involvement in tri-faith are far fewer than there was, and they've recognized that it's their own issue. It's not really something that would be speaking for the congregation as a whole, because they recognize it's wrong. And they'll tell you. They said, I recognize this is wrong, how I feel. I can't help how I feel. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that. You get it. And all you can do is put it out for them to experience it. And once they experience the relationships
their attitude will change.
It does.
Yeah. Right. So, yes.
One more quick question.
Yes.
The other Jewish groups that are this hinder or help your relationships with them, or were those relationships already set?
The relationships, it's interesting. The relationships amongst the different Jewish synagogues are actually pretty good in Omaha. We have a very strong Jewish community. There's certainly, a little bit of, and not even backstabbing. It doesn't even get that bad, because we're not in a competitive market to try to get congregants. I mean, most congregants know if they're Reformed or Conservative or Orthodox. We do have people that switch back and forth for whatever reason. So we have had probably a few congregants that maybe have left and said it was for another reason, but it may be for this reason. I don't know, and gone to the conservative synagogue. But I would tell you, I think we've had an influx and more people who either come to us because of our school, our education, our rabbi, or our involvement in Tri-Faith. So,
I know we got to close, so just a couple real quick things before we end. There's some. We've got our business cards up here. There's some wonderful recipes here from our communities. Take some. They're on our website also. If you'd like to have a little pin that says I'm a neighbor, because we are looking for virtual neighbors. We want everyone to be able to participate in this. We would like to. We'd love to have you take that. On our websites, we've tried to include some resources for people. We're going to be taking Tri-Faith on the road this summer just across the Diocese of Nebraska to smaller communities that have Muslim populations and some Jewish populations. Not many of our communities have large Jewish populations. I think you probably Temple, Omaha is the only one that has. Lincoln has one a temple. So, but still, we're trying to teach the people how to.
That's where the Huskers reside.
Yeah, to help engage in this interfaith dialogue. How do they do that? And in the same sense, then how do we enter into the ecumenical dialogue as well? And I'm sure all of you have probably read this book, but if you haven't, I really recommend it because it'll work for interfaith or for ecumenical work. But it's I just love this book because it's got the Decalogue of Trilogue. So anyway, thank you so much for allowing us to share our story with you. But do come up, and if you've got your business card and would like to be on our constant contact list or find out more about us, please drop your card in.